And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 723, continuing our team-by-team previews for the fantasy baseball season. And we head to Texas, the Texas Rangers, the little AL West action here, a team that I like to refer to as a beer league softball team now, the way they can just, they're going to hit and hit and hit and hit and hit and hope they can pitch. That's what it's going to turn into throughout the season here. So we'll talk about that much, much more. And to help me break them down, as he's been kind enough to help me break down the Rangers since this began. You can find his work over on FTN Fantasy. He's on Blue Sky at lucasbeery33.bsky.social. The one, the only, Lucas Beery. How we doing, my friend?
I'm doing great, man. Excited to talk about the Rangers. They're a really fun team. And I was talking with my friend Lou Landers earlier today, and he gave me his top 10 MLB teams. And I said, dude, you got to have the Rangers on there. And I feel pretty good about that. They have question marks with their pitching as far as their volume. DeGrom, even older guys such as Eovaldi as well, has some volume questions. But when they're healthy, they're one of the top tier teams in the American League, in my opinion.
Yep, 100% agree. And we're kind of joking off air, you know, the Dodgers keep signing people, and you try to, like, in my brain, we're joking about the Dodgers, but in my brain, it's like, who can compete with the Dodgers, like, without the injuries? And an offense like the Rangers could put up a fight. Now, pitching can be tricky, but that's another time for another story for another day type situation. Before we get into talking players with the Texas Rangers, I know you're not a diehard Rangers fan. You're just being an awesome guy and helping me with this team, but what's your thoughts on how it ended up for them last year? You know, 2 years ago, they go to the World Series and win the whole thing. That was pretty sweet. Obviously, a step back last year, but what were your kind of thoughts on the Rangers season?
Yeah, I mean, I think most of your listeners are fantasy baseball players. I would imagine all of them, as a matter of fact. And it shows you can have a great year 1 year, and things can look about the same as far as your draft and your roster, and things can just have a downturn. Corey Seager misses a ton of time. Marcus Semien is pretty much the same player, but things don't go well, and you have pitching injuries. So they have the bulk of the same roster. It just didn't go their way. That shows you the variance and why this game isn't played on paper and it's played on the ball field. So they have a good team, but things just didn't pan out for them last year.
No doubt about it. So let's get into these players. For those that's keeping track at home, I'm using NFBC Draft Champions ADP from January 1st will give us a rough idea of what's going on in the drafting landscape. But you mentioned Marcus Semien. It was a down season for Marcus Semien. Still got you 23 home runs, but only 8 stolen bases. Biggest thing, hit .237. That was a big downplay. And 159 games, oh my goodness. Like, we didn't get the full gamut of Semien, but still 718 plate appearances. What's your thoughts on Semien now heading into 2025? He's going to be 34 years old. But he comes with an ADP around 93-ish, give or take, which is quite low compared to recent seasons.
Yeah, when I was very kicking off my research at the very beginning of the offseason, I had looked at Semien, and you know, a lot of his metrics look the same. His strikeout rate's right where it always has been. He's walking just as much. Even his barrel rate hasn't gone down, and it's not been a great barrel rate, but for a guy who strikes out less than 15% of the time, 6.5% barrel rate's acceptable, especially because he is a max playing time guy. So I look at the Steamer projection of 25 home runs, 12 steals, .250 average, great runs scored. I'm good with it. I think even in a down year last year, the guy put over 100 runs up. We've seen his ADP come up little by little as the off seasons went on, when people have looked at him more. And in a position in second base where there's a lot of okay, decent options in a 15-team league, but in a 12-team league, I think it's key to differentiate yourself and have a strong hitting base. I would be thrilled to take Semien at this ADP, and I think you could even bump him up a round or so and still have good value for where he's going, because the skills to me have not disintegrated that much. I think he just had some bad luck, but I think he'll bounce back even though he is getting a little older.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Usually I'm an anti-Semien guy in my drafts just because of his price tag and what he brings to the table, but we're talking the second base position, which we know it's like not the greatest. There are some good talents that, you know, it's one of those you can wait on and kind of be okay with what you want. It's not great, but if you want to get elite, you got to go early. This was a former elite second baseman that, like you said, the skills didn't drop off a ton, which is nice. So I am intrigued at that ADP. Still got the over 700 plate appearances. You know, we talk about it all the time in fantasy baseball. Plate appearances are king. It's a big thing. So I don't see that changing a ton. And this lineup is ridiculous, which I'll probably say a dozen more times in this show, but it's pretty, pretty good. All right, you mentioned Corey Seager earlier, and the biggest bugaboo I always have with Corey Seager is injuries. Played 123 games last year, which better than usual for Seager. He played 151 in 2022, but 123, 30 home runs, 278 average. The thing with me is always the price tag with Corey Seager, but I've always been anti-Seager. Other people love Corey Seager, so it's each their own. It's a beautiful game we play. ADP's around 50, Lucas. How are we feeling on Corey Seager heading into 2025?
Yeah, I mean, with Simeon, I'm excited to target him just because it is a lot cheaper. They're obviously different players, but with Seager, that price tag of 50, it's an acceptable player at the right range if you need batting average. But he's a somewhat tricky fit since he doesn't run, and we need 180 to 200 steals to compete for a really high point total in steals. So that's a huge thing to consider. As well as the health issues is probably even a bigger issue. So I'm not excited necessarily about him, but I think in the right build, he would make some sense. He's a premium batting average guy. He's just a premium hitter. He has great power. But, yeah, the volume concerns are very real. And coming off of surgery yet again, as far as that hip sports hernia area, definitely carries a lot of risk as far as volume and health.
Yep, I'm with you. I'm just going to continue to ride the no Seager train, and it's kind of only bit me once, so I'll take that as a win, all things considered, and see what happens this year. Wyatt Langford, everyone talks, Jackson Churio, Jackson Merrill, they're going high up in drafts. You got Wyatt Langford, who the hype was big for last year, not a great start, got hurt, comes back, though, finishes quite well in the second half. ADP is around 47 right now. It's slowly creeping up. I feel like it should be even higher. What are your thoughts on Jackson Merrill? It's like, even on a down year, 16 homers, 19 stolen bases.
Yeah, he really put it together towards the end of the year. He was slow starting out of the gate, which is normal. You know, you're a rookie. He only had 200 plate appearances in the minor leagues before last year. And think about that. This guy had 200 plate appearances in the minors, came up, picked in, you know, the fourth, fifth round in main event leagues, and that's about where his price is again next year. So I think he's a solid buy, but the proven players that you have to pass up for him are too much for me. So I think he's not quite yet a finished product, but I also wouldn't be surprised if he were to turn it on and go crazy. I just prefer some of the starting pitchers around him, your Framber Valdez's, your Michael Kings of the world. But if you're looking for an outfielder, I think he's fine. I just, it's still a very high price to pay for me, I guess.
Yeah, where he's getting drafted, it's getting close to that 3-4 turn in a 15 where a lot of people are taking starting pitchers. So it's a great point you make there. Maybe that's why he's, to me, kind of where he's sitting away from Jackson Merrill and Churio. There's a gap that takes place there. We'll see. Like, I feel like there's Langford, he takes this big jump and he's the guy everybody wants, or there's still growing pains. There's no in between when it comes to him for me.
I guess would you think that second half is more realistic, or you think that first half needs to be factored in? Or because we see sometimes guys have that big second half jump and that's just kind of what they become. I'm not going to compare him to Mike Trout, but that's kind of what happened with him.
I'm leaning more towards favoring the second half in this one as a young guy. Fair. Getting his feet wet, but still, like you mentioned, growing pains. Barely any minor league at bats. Still super young, but it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I'm buying in. It could bite me tremendously though at that ADP. Like, he has to come through at that ADP. That is for sure.
Right.
All right, Adelis Garcia, a guy that not too long ago was just a power running machine, hitting 245 ish. Life was good. Things have slowed down a bit last year. 25 homers. 11 steals, only hit 224. It was a drastic drop-off. A drop-off that has cost Adelis's ADP to drop to 151 right now. How are we feeling? You thinking bounce back at that ADP, or are you concerned?
Yeah, that's a pretty good ADP, I believe, given all the context factors of this being a strong lineup. Outfield is interesting. I mean, there's a lot of ways to deal with outfield, but I think if you pick him, he would fit in any team, whether you waited on outfield or if you make him your outfield three or even four if you really invested. And he has a fairly broad base. He's more of a power kind of guy, but he can throw some steals in here and there. And the counting stats should be good. So I'm completely good with this ADP, and I like it more than Langford. Just because, like you said, with Langford, he really has to produce at a very high level versus with Adolis, even if he's in between 2024 where he had a down year and 2023 where he had a great year and he just has a solid year, I think you're happy if he stays fairly healthy.
No, you're 100% correct. The biggest thing is he needs to get that batting average back up to that 245 world, and we can live with that with him. If he's just going to be a poor batting average guy, we still have problems. And that was my issue in the OC I drafted on Monday night, that I was just like, I need some batting average help. I don't know if I can take the risk. Where in an OC, I probably should that's have true. Taken the risk. I should have taken the risk, but that's one of those hindsight picks already in January. All right, new Texas Ranger. DH will be in a strong side platoon. That is when Jock Jams, Joc Pederson, for those who don't keep track at home, is coming off a really strong 23 home run, 7 stolen base year, where he hit 275 with Arizona. And, you know, we saw him 2 years ago at 274 with 23 homers for the Giants. We've seen windows of being very good. We've seen other windows of being good, but not great. But, like, for the most part, if he's platooning, things are good. Joc Jams has an ADP of around 335, and he's util only right now. Are you good with that when it comes to Pederson, knowing he will sit versus majority of left-handed pitchers?
Yeah, this is probably my favorite player we've talked about so far, besides Semien, who I like that. After pick 300, I mean, he's falling that far because you have teams clogged up with utility like Ozuna, Ohtani, Rucker, Schwarber. So automatically half the teams already cannot, or a third of the teams, excuse me, cannot look at Pederson. And it's interesting because, Bubba, I'm not sure if you've noticed this, but a guy like Trey Turner is falling in drafts because of his age. Yep. Well, Pederson is about the same age, but he's aging like fine wine. He just, once he put that glove away and became a full-time DH, his hitting has just gone off. Since he went to San Francisco, he's just mastered the art of hitting. So you put him in there against right-handers. If he has two lefties on the schedule, you sit him. It's very cut and dry. So I love this price just to get not only a premium power guy, but maybe a guy who could throw you some batting average. It's not a guarantee, but he's been good batting average 2 out of the last 3 years.
Yep, I'm with you. I love the pick. I actually took him in my OC late as kind of a spec play to see where it goes, just because that power potential hitting in the middle of that lineup, there could be a ton of run potential with it. Like, there's a lot to like with Joc Jams, and not having to face lefties, only getting the premium at-bats, don't hate it. Don't hate it at all. Josh Jung, this is a player that a lot of us were excited about a couple years ago. Then wrist injuries have kind of derailed things a bit, especially pretty much wiped out last season, all things said and done. And 2023 was good before he got hurt as well. So it's kind of been a year and a half, maybe a year and a quarter, not ideal for Jung. He's apparently healthy. We've heard all that stuff. Haven't seen anything just yet. But Jung has an ADP of 224. And the talent we liked a couple years ago, way better than 224. So how are you feeling knowing that they say he's healthy, but we don't know for sure situation at that price tag with Josh Jung?
To be honest, in a DC or in a draft and hold format, I'm feeling very squeamish, even with the good news. I mean, I had an opportunity at him in the late 200s, and I just passed on him just because you can't change out your roster. There's no transactions. So, I mean, if this guy goes belly up early in the year, you can't say you didn't see it coming. Multiple wrist injuries, recurring deal. He had a shoulder injury that he suffered in the preseason a few years ago, and he missed a significant amount of time. He also missed time for the COVID season. So as a young hitter, this guy's missing at-bats. He's missing reps. I do love his talent when he's healthy, but it's also been a roller coaster with high strikeout rates due to some of that missed time, in my opinion. And he's too young to DH, and they're not going to go that route with him yet. But until I see a really good amount of play in spring training, or if it's in a Fab League, I'm staying away from him in the DCs.
Yeah, I think I had one share really early thinking, like, okay, price is right, we'll see what happens. But as draft season keeps going on, I've kind of circled away from Josh Jung and kind of similar thought process as you. It's like, yeah, he could pull it out. We've seen those wrist injuries linger, and I'm just concerned. Yep. Concerned with him quite a bit. And I hope I'm wrong, but time will tell.
Same.
All right, Evan Carter, a guy that 2 years ago came on as an OBP machine, was a big part of the Rangers World Series run, and then last year battled a very bad back injury, apparently. Only played in 45 games, 5 homers, 2 steals, .188 batting average. Apparently, he's fully healthy yet again. He's supposed to be the starting center fielder for the Texas Rangers, and he has an ADP of 296, Lucas. So not that expensive, all things considered. How are we feeling on Evan Carter? Because at that price point, it's at least worth the conversation.
Yeah, it's funny. We were having some good laughs in the Bubba and the Bloom Discord, your great Discord over on your Patreon, and talking, man, it wasn't that long ago that Carter and Langford were linked up at ADP. Yep. Yep. And those things have gone in opposite directions. So I suppose if you believe in the buy high, sell low, you can look at Carter. Again, it's another thing where do you want to add a guy that has had significant back issues? He's going to have platoon issues. He also is probably going to be a low batting average. His WRC plus numbers look strong, but that's due to a double-digit walk rate. So that's not going to help you in NFBC. It will help you in points or on base. But at 296, man, that does sound pretty juicy. So, again, he's tricky. Maybe he's a little better in the 50s format where if you do kiss – an outfield spot goodbye because he's out, it's not as painful. But if I do draft him, I would make sure I have extra depth because he does have significant injury with the injury risk.
100%. I think he's a really interesting OC play because at his ADP, you can just drop him. Just drop him if things don't work out, and you can replace third, fourth, fifth outfielders and OCs. Like, you don't want to, but you can. You can find those guys on the waiver wire. And like you mentioned, that's why I think why the 50s, the 12 team draft an old format, your depth at outfielder is obviously much better than it is in a DC. And you can probably still do it in a DC, but you don't like your depth as much as you would in a 50. So, yeah, there's some interesting angles to Evan Carter, like where I could see a 15-15 type guy. There's also the guy where that back injury just not good at all. All right, I love this move. Not only because I'm a big Jake Berger fan to begin with, but I make the softball joke that you throw this guy in the mix. Like, this is the guy you see playing slow pitch softball and just dropping bombs all over the place. Jake Berger, 29 homers last year, 34 the year before. He's hit .250 in 3 straight seasons, which is pretty remarkable, all things considered. Now he heads to Texas with an ADP of 121, which has definitely climbed since going to Texas. His min pick in January is 103, because I've been targeting him all draft season. And I still am able to get him once in a while, but I have not been able to push him like certain people do. And I just end up not getting him in those drafts. I love it. I love the power. I love the potential in this lineup, but it is a steep price. That's why I'm curious your thoughts on paying for this, because it's an average batting average with a ton of power.
Yeah, he is a very interesting player. And as far as the strikeout rate, he's improved every single year he's been in the big leagues. The power is unquestioned. It's just a matter of, can some pitchers manipulate him and get him to just chase out of the zone and nullify his power? But I think he's proven himself. The guy's got 1,300 plate appearances with really strong power numbers, heading into an extreme upgrade as far as lineup and park. Miami is Chicago White Sox level disaster. I mean, that's no other way to put it. Not trying to be a jerk, but I like this. And there's a good reason that his ADP has gone up. We oftentimes in the fantasy world want to react to every little bits and pieces and news, and it makes sense to fade a guy when he goes up. But I think with Berger, this is a fine rise. You've got double positions with first and third, so that's a nice bonus. Even in season for Fab Leagues, that's a good bonus to have, to be able to pick and choose on waivers your preferred player in Fab. So I'm good with this price, and I think he's a good pick where he's going.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like I said, I'm trying. I actually just got him at an FPC 50 before the show that I'm drafting with Bloomfield and some other guys. So I'm trying to get as many shares as I can and then see where it goes from there. Alrighty, the catching situation in Texas. Wasn't too long ago where Jonah Heim was the next best thing, because he had 95 RBIs. And last year, things came back to earth, hit .220. 13 home runs, 1 stolen base, 59 RBIs. They bring in Kyle Higashioka, who you added to the outline with for good reasons, because I wanted Higgy to go back to San Diego and be the dude. But this will be interesting. Higgy's got an ADP of 381. Jonah Heim, ADP of 324. What's your thoughts on this catching situation for fantasy?
You know, I loved Higgy when he was a free agent because he was dirt cheap. I was able to get him very late in a DC. And, yes, he's age 35, and he's coming off a major career year that a lot of it's going to regress back to normal. But he pulls the ball, hits home runs. That's really his only goal, and play good defense. That's why he got himself a two-year deal, which I figured would be a one-year deal. I think him and Heim are going to go 50-50. Correct me if you think I'm wrong, but if Heim slips enough, I'm okay with him, even though Heim is interesting enough, but he's not exciting by any means. So I think these are solid C3 guys. Prefer Higgy because he's a bit cheaper and has home run power. Heim really doesn't have a carrying tool other than volume. The last few years was his biggest asset, but they're both decent players for sure.
Yeah, what I'm thinking could be like 50-50 is fair. I see a world where eventually Higgy takes over the strong side platoon, because if you look at the splits here, Higgy hits righties better than lefties. He hits them very well. He hits them better than Heim hits righties. Heim's a switch hitter, hits lefties better than righties. So it's a perfect platoon situation. You just most don't think about it because you see Heim is switch hitting. He's the lefty. It's like people's look at that straight away. Higgy hits righties a million times better than his lefties. Like, it's not even close, especially in the power department. And Heim's the flip side. He's a better right-handed hitter against left-handed pitching. So there's a world where that takes place, and that's why I have pretty much just crossed Heim off my list. I won't draft him at all. There's a world where, like I said, I could see Higgy eventually taking over a lot of the reps there in Texas. We'll see. That I think they're still pretty loyal to Heim, all things considered. But if they want the best offensive possibilities, Higgy's got a shot. I'll say that much.
You know what's interesting? This is a bit deep in the weeds, but it's catcher, so I know it's accepted here.
Yes, it is.
Heim would be a perfect trade target for a team that's looking to upgrade, like a Boston Red Sox. Wong is a terrible defender. He's a decent hitter, but there's a couple teams that could go after Heim. Padres are another one. So just looking at it, if you were to trade off Heim, clear out a little bit of payroll, maybe pick up an asset back, and then sign a scrubby free agent to go behind Higgy Asha. The only problem is you'd really be relying a lot on a 35-year-old coming off a career year.
Catch. Yeah. That's the catch, is he is getting older and coming off a big year. But I like where your head's at. I think there's definitely something there in the baseball world. Like, even a Heim to – I don't know if they want to go to Colorado, but that would be fun. There are teams. I'm not going to start rolling through every roster out there, but you're right. There are some definite options, like San Diego.
Wouldn't be shocked if I guess there was a move.
Yes. But yeah, that would be.
It's hard to see catchers traded. I think it's uncommon since they work with the pitchers so well. It takes a lot of rapport.
Yeah, I think a lot of people look at, like, what's the return in reality? Like, what are we really giving you for these guys? Is it worth it type thing? But it's because people don't respect catchers. That's the difference. They just don't understand they're people too. Any other hitters worth discussing on the roster? I think we nailed most of them, but maybe there's someone else where that might stand out come fantasy. Like, two guys I have dilemmas in DCs, Josh Smith and Leody Taveras, because like I think Leody should be starting, but then you look at their outfield of Adelise, Carter, Lankford. Okay, that's fair. Leody probably doesn't start, but I think in a DC there's viability there because he'll play enough. Same with Josh Smith. It's like the infield's full, but we already talked about Corey Seager's health, so that's, or Josh Young's health. So what's your thoughts on those two guys, real quick?
Yeah, I think with Leody, he's a little bit cut and dry. He's a premium defender, but his bat has always lagged behind. He had a good stretch or two where people thought he was breaking out. Yep. And he's going to play. It just takes one injury on this team or even days off. You're not telling me guys like Evan Carter aren't going to take some days off here and there.
True.
And Leody is a switch hitter too, so that's only going to benefit him. So he could be a natural platoon partner for Carter. So I like Leody as just a boring at-bats kind of guy in D.C., and his skills are decent enough. They're not exceptional, but he can provide a little bit of power and some steals. With Josh Smith, I feel like he just got so lucky last year. It's hard for me to press him. So just there's not a lot of meat on the bone for his skill set. It does take one injury, and he will also probably play a little bit unless they bring in a cheap free agent, like a Jose Iglesias type, not necessarily him, but that just cheap older guy that can play, but I think Josh Smith's more AL only at this point.
That's fair. Leody Taveras, ADP of around 440 right now. And Josh Smith coming in with an ADP of around 417. So they're not like free, not expensive, but not free to say the least. All right, let's head to the mound where on name value, very stacked rotation. Tons of injury questions as you go through this rotation. And we'll start with one of the bigger injury questions going out there. One Jacob DeGrom, who put together 10 innings last year. He got a few reps as things wound down. That was just enough to get people excited, Lucas, because Jacob has an ADP of 37 right now for a guy that he threw 10 innings last year, 30 innings the year before, 64, 92, 68. That's his last five seasons of professional baseball. What's your thoughts on this ADP of 37? Because some people I respect a lot are all in. My risk tolerance does not allow for that.
Yeah, I understand. Some people are saying that DeGrom has a new ligament and he should be ready to roll. He's had plenty of rest and he should be good. And that is fair that he did recover that area that was questioning, that was bothering him. However, you have to look at the facts. This guy's going to be turning age 37, hasn't pitched a significant workload since 2019, which is a long time ago. And he's had other injury issues in addition to his elbow, which was barking for 3-4 years before he finally got it fixed. He's had shoulder issues, elbow issues, side issues, neck issues, back issues. I mean, back in the 2020 campaign, it was about every other start. He would either be scratched or pushed back a day or two. And I had him. That was the last time I had him, was in 2020. It's just too much of a cost for a guy that's way advanced as far as age. And he's had other maladies besides elbow. It's not just an elbow and he's fixed. There's a lot of other body parts that he's dealt with as far as issues. So I'm completely out on him.
Yep. Yep. I'm with you as well. I just can't pay that price with other pitchers that are, knock on wood, healthy right now. I'm going to take my chances there and see where things go. All right. Nate, the great Nate Eovaldi. So we went from a 36-year-old to a 35-year-old. This is good. This is how you build rotations these days. Eovaldi coming off 170 innings this past year, which was the most he's thrown since 2021. Ratio below 4. He's had that every season since 2020. Strikeouts are still good. Not great, but good. And you got an ADP of around 202 right now. How are you feeling on Eovaldi, who year in and year out, it's just like, please stay healthy.
Love Eovaldi. He's one of my favorite pitchers. He's dirt cheap for what you're getting year over year. And while he does have injury risk, he seems to just know his body well enough where he can recover and recuperate. The year that they won the World Series, he missed parts of the middle of the year, came back, reworked his delivery somehow, and was able to have a good run and pitch great in the World Series. So, yes, you can argue he's got some similarities to DeGrom where he could break down at a moment's notice, but you're getting around pick 200. He's got a proven track record, a deep pitch mix, and his metrics are really good. So I love Eovaldi. Don't expect more than about 140 innings, 150 if you're lucky, and just rolling out there when he's good to go. If you see his velocity go down, you can pull him out of your lineup too. So he's easy to use.
Yeah, no, and all great points there. The price tag kind of already bakes in some missed time, yes, potentially. It's already baking that in. I'm also the mindset, kind of shoot for 140, 150. Yep. Be happy with that. We're good. And, yeah, and he does let you know when, like, he'll pull himself early. He'll work through things, and knock on wood, we're good in that regard. So I like Eovaldi quite a bit as well. All right, from 36 to 35, we're going to 33-year-old pitcher. And John Gray threw 102 innings last year, battled some injuries as well, but threw 157 the year before, 127, 149. So we have an idea of what to expect from John Gray in the innings pitch department. And then when you're talking about Gray, ADP's almost 500. So how are we feeling on that? Because honestly, like 130 innings, again, that's still if, but an ADP of 500.
Yeah, he is significantly discounted from his previous price. I mean, he's kind of a toss-up for me. I mean, I could go either way. I don't have a ton of excitement for him. I did draft him in my first DC, and I feel okay about it. Got him in the mid-30s as far as rounds. But some things are going backwards as far as his strikeouts minus walks. His velocity has also gone down too, which if that goes down, that's somewhat of a problem because he's not a big velocity guy. I've heard rumors he could go to the bullpen. If he does that, I don't think he's necessarily going to get saves. This is a team that, let's face it, is all hands on deck to try to win this division and win this World Series. So he could lose his rotation spot, but he's just kind of a very boring SP depth kind of pick at this point. I don't see a ton of upside, but he also has put together some solid roto season, so you can't rule that possibility out, I suppose.
Yeah, the velocity is a major concern. I'm with you there. And like they were toying with the bullpen last year, so definitely good things to think about. And maybe that's why he's baked into that 500 ADP. Could see that factoring in as well. All right, so to a 30-year-old pitcher in Tyler Molle, who threw 25 innings in 2023, threw 12 innings last year. We'll see what we get this year. ADP's 442 for Molle. Are we interested in this one at all, or is it kind of a John Gray feel for you?
Almost a worse feel, because at least with Gray, he somehow has volume. Not greatest volume, but if you need a pitcher nine, maybe you might be able to use him a few weeks. But with Molle, he hasn't pitched a full workload in a few years. He's dealt with Tommy John, tried to recover from that, and had complications last year, and his velocities went way down. And he needs velocity even more than Gray, because he's a 93, 94, while Gray is more 95, 96 at his peak. So it would have to be a fab league where if he doesn't look like he's the part, you can pitch him and ditch him, no big deal. In a DC, it's much more magnified than with Josh Young. I don't want to take a guy that could easily give you 30 innings and that'd be all you get. Don't want that.
Yep. I'm with you. Molly's pretty much just passed over in every one of my drafts for me. Not too interested in that situation. A pitcher I am interested in is Cody Bradford, a guy that burst onto the scene, threw really well last year. And then he had some back and neck issues. Came back, threw okay, but really never got a full go after that. Totaled 76 innings, but ratios were good, strikeouts were good, was very serviceable when he's out there. He's scheduled to be the fifth man for now. We'll talk more about the sixth man, and obviously already talked about injury risk, so I think the fifth and the sixth guys will get plenty of run here. But Bradford's ADP is 315, gone as high as 271. How are we feeling on Cody Bradford?
I like this price. I would love it if he had a little bit more velocity, but his metrics are really good. 18.5% strikeouts minus walks. You will not find a player like that in this range unless it's kind of a generic, non-name brand, non-sexy player like a Cody Bradford. He's a change-up first guy with lower velocity, but he's in a good context. I think this is a good price. He's going to pitch a lot because all the guys that we named have injury risk, every last one of them. Yep. So I have no issues taking him, even if you think he's on the outside looking in with an elite prospect that we'll talk about coming up here in a minute. But I think he's just a solid pitcher. I like him.
Yep, took Bradford with one of my last picks in my OC. I like the upside there. We'll see. Could throw it away. Could realize he's just a streamer in a 12. But
true.
One of my last picks. We'll see where it goes for the preseason and go from there. That big-time prospect we're going to talk about is Kumar Rocker. This guy, you know, once a number one pick, had it. Elbow issues, didn't even sign, went to independent leagues. Now Texas gets him. And we saw him throw 11 innings for the Rangers last year, threw 36 innings in the minors. Those were his first innings really in a while. It feels like where he really put some innings together last year. Strikeouts are nuts. Control is still kind of an issue with him. But ADP of 290, are we buying a Kumar Rocker run heading into 2025?
Yeah, so we talked a little bit about some injury risks and being aware of that, but I think with Rocker is a risk I'm willing to take. He has potentially a 70, maybe even 80 grade slider that he can use even against left-handed hitters when he's a righty, which is not often you see that. Usually a right-handed pitcher to a lefty has to have some sort of a weapon. Slider's not always it. So fastball-wise, it's not a huge elite fastball. If it was, he would have a little bit better of an outlook. But yeah, I think this late in the draft, he's going to have a path to playing time. He's got a monster breaking ball. I mean, he would just make minor leaguers look cartoonish last year with 36% strikeout minus walk. I mean, he was unhittable. Of course, it didn't translate immediately in the pros since you're going against the best of the best. But I think in that range, this is just as good of a pick as any if you're looking for an upside pitcher. There is risk given the health issues. And I don't think that if he looks dominant in spring training, I don't think that they'll be afraid to put him in the rotation and move John Gray to the bullpen. there might be politics reasons behind why they don't do that. I'm curious your thoughts, but I think if this dude looks really good, it's a rotation that's going to be awarded based on performance, not just based on name value in my mind.
Yeah, if he looks good, you're not taking him out. There's really yes. you can't take him out with the injury. Like, you either go six man with this old rotation that we talked about, yeah. or you start moving a Molly to the bullpen, or heck, Bradford was supposed to be in the bullpen all last year. I still think Bradford's better than Molly and maybe Gray too. But or Molly, whatever it is. He should be the one out of the way. But Gray, we've seen him go back and forth and pitch out of the bullpen. So that makes sense. I can see that. If Rocker pitches well, Rocker's in the rotation. That's just the way I see it. I'd be shocked. Like, it'd be serious politicking, like you said, if somehow Kumar is not in that rotation. So I'd be willing to take the chance in ADP. He's going to have an impact sometime this year in DCs and in the PC 50s. And I think he's going to be a real interesting situation off and on that could pan out to be pretty good.
You could argue that it's a little surprising he's going almost at 300, given that yes. fact that people love the upside. I mean, there's some names on the list that I could see him going ahead of that's just it's like, okay, easily he can fly past Gavin Williams, who has health concerns, or Nick Lodolo, who pitches in Coors Field, Reese Olson. Just there's a lot of names on here where all it takes is one little video on Twitter and Rocker's going to shoot up 3, 4, 5 rounds easy.
Yep, this is why we draft early sometimes, because you are not going to get this price tag for long once you start seeing him report to camp and rumbling, start serving. Oh, he's going to make the rotation, and then it's just skyrocketing from there.
Yep.
All right, let's go to the bullpen here, where Kirby Yates was awesome last year. It seemed like Kirby Yates was going to re-sign with the Rangers, and the Dodgers showed up again on another free agent. Just, you know, par for the course in the offseason of 2025. So right now, the Rangers did sign Chris Martin. And I joked, I said, they got their closer for cheap. It's what they wanted. And they were like, no, they're going to sign someone else. They still might. There's Kenley Jansen out there. There's other people out there. Don't get me wrong. But for now, Chris Martin is probably penciled in to close. And there was rumbles of people liked him to close potentially in, you know, Boston at one point. Chris Martin has an ADP of 408, Lucas. 408. How are we feeling on this bullpen situation?
Yeah, I do think they're going to bring in another big guy, maybe a Kenley Jansen, maybe a Carlos Estevez, even a David Robertson potentially, who has more closing experience than Chris Martin. Yep. That is a solid price to take a handcuff as well as a usable setup man. So I, for one, think that this is a team that's gone heavy in. They traded for Berger. They brought in Jock Peterson and paid a lot of money to do so for a two-year deal. They paid 2 years for Higashioka. I think this is a team that's not complete for the bullpen. So I can see a Kenley Jansen, a Carlos Estevez, of the likes. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think they are still in the market. I like Martin. I think he's fine. I just don't think he's the guy closing come opening day. I think there's definitely a move to be made there. Anybody else in the bullpen we should keep an eye on? You did highlight someone here. I'm really curious what you have to say.
Yeah, so actually there's two other pitching prospects that I think need to be hit up because they could be fab-worthy, potentially. One is Jack Leiter, the son of Al Leiter. He's made a few starts here and there in the big leagues, and his command is really, really bad. He does have good stuff, so it does interest you for a bullpen role one day, but he really needs to take a step forward with the command, so I cannot draft Jack Leiter. But the guy that I actually am excited for in the last few rounds is Emiliano Teodo. He also has bad command. He's got like a 30-40 grade command, but he's got 100-plus mile-an-hour fastball, and the team that's literally this all-in, I think he stopped this starting gig, put him in the bullpen, go all in, and maybe he elevates himself up to your closer of the future. But DeGrom is older. Seager is getting a little bit older. Simeon's older. Let's just go all in, put Teodo in that major league bullpen if you think he's ready, and let him ride.
Yeah, they're going to need help. I'm looking at just their, like, on Fang, the roster resource pitching. They have Rocker in the minors, which we agree probably won't be there. Then there's Teodo, there's Leiter. There's not a lot of household names you can just call up and kind of throw out there right now. Like, their depth is not ideal for a rotation that might be going on the AARP pretty soon. Any other potential prospects, like hitter wise, that we should be keeping an eye out for? Because the bats are loaded. Bats are loaded in Texas. It's the pitching that is the concern right now.
You know, you've got a guy floating around in the minors like a Justin Foscue. He's a decent player, but he would be a lot better looking out of Miami, where they were to give him 500 at bats and just let him ride. He has no defensive home, so it's not going to probably work out for him in Texas, barring tons of injuries, which hopefully that doesn't happen for their fans again. So they are they don't have a lot of proximity prospects in their farm system.
Yep, that checks out. Checks out for sure. All right. Before we wrap up, how do you think things finish for the Rangers in 2025? You got the Astros, who are always hanging around, even without Tucker, yeah. They should still be good. The Athletics were a surprise next year, but new place, who knows what they're going to do. Mariners will hang around with that rotation. And then you got the Angels. So how do you think the Rangers finish up here in 2025?
You know, I think the Athletics are going to be improved a bit. Now, as far as how improved, that's really anyone's guess. You know, the first kind of number that came to my head was something in 88, 89 wins for the Texas Rangers. Now, a lot of that's going to depend on how much pitching health they get. That's going to be really the biggest answer, because their offense is stacked. Bullpen-wise, they need help too. I mean, there's some serious holes there, but that's one of the things that you can fix if you invest the right resources, which their payroll is way high. So it's going to be a tricky thing to navigate, but I think they have a high ceiling. They've proven they're a World Series type of team, and between them and the Astros, it'll be a dogfight, I think, till the end.
Yep, I'm with you. I think they're gonna hang in there, but it's all pitching dependent. Like, I'm really – like, I'd love to see them go get, like, a Nick Pivetta, go get a good closer. Like, go get some depth. They need to do it badly and spend a few more dollars and see what happens, because they – it'd be a shame to waste that offense. Like, it's just not ideal with that, but we'll see. We'll see how that pans out. All right, Lucas, always a pleasure. Before we head out of here, remind everybody where they can find you and what you got coming up down the pipeline over there at FTN.
Yeah, you can find me on Blue Sky. Just type in my name, Lucas Beery, on there. And as far as FTN, I'm working on a battleship article series, which has been fun. Kick that off over the weekend. Looked at catchers and corner infielders as far as potential busts that can sink the battleship, so to speak. So I'll have about four more articles coming out in that series, and feel free to check it out. It's going to be fun.
Yep, it is. We're close. Pitchers and catchers report very soon, my friend, and we got some real baseball coming up. So draft pretty quick, and get your auctions going, because Lucas, a couple years ago, won the overall, so watch out for this guy. And I think you're signed up for the listener leagues, right? Yeah? No? Yeah?
Yes, I am. Yes, ready for the auction action in there, too. So.
Yeah, I think we got at least eight teams right now. So we're going to, or eight leagues, I should say, right now. So that'll be fun as well. But thanks as always, my friend. Always great chatting with you.
Likewise, man. It's awesome.
All right, everybody. This is Bench with Bubba, episode 723, your 2025 Texas Rangers preview. Catch you all next time.